Welcome to another episode of Triple Stomp. And we've got another fantastic guest for you today to have hopefully a lovely conversation. So I'll throw it over to the guest for them to introduce themselves. Over to you.
How's it going, everybody? My name is Alex Casares. I am a UFC fighter, top 15 in the world at the moment.
All right. And can you tell me a bit about your journey, how you got into the UFC?
How I got into it?
Yeah.
Oh, I started my mixed martial arts career when I was 18, and I was just fighting local fights and stuff. It kind of came off of a whim. I heard that they were having tryouts up in North Carolina, and I just kind of went with it, just kind of just tried out for the tryouts, did really well, and never looked back from there, honestly. Just was just kind of got into it.
Since you were 18 then, yeah?
Yep.
And what if you could speak to your 18-year-old self now, what would you say to that 18-year-old after having the life experiences that you've had? If you were starting out again, what would you say to yourself, do you think?
Well, I don't think I would say anything, to be honest with you. I can't regret how my life turned out. I think when I was 18, when I started my career, I think I knew what I wanted to do. I kind of stuck with it, so didn't have too many regrets. Of course, there was ups and downs, but other than that, I'm kind of, I guess I would just say, man, just thank you for doing what you wanted to do in life and not listen to anybody else, honestly.
Were there a lot of people telling you not to do this?
Oh, of course. A lot of people not only telling you not to do this, but also doubting and not thinking that it was capable or possible for a person of my stature, size, and I guess demeanor and character as well. Even the people closest to me were the ones, I guess, who were more doubtful of my abilities to pursue such a career. So, the beginning is always difficult.
Yeah. But has it got easier over the course of time?
No, it doesn't get easier. It never gets easier. We just get a little tougher. That's all.
Okay. And if you could do anything else, what would that be?
If I could do anything else as a career?
Yeah.
Honestly, I love what I do. If I could do anything else, I think I would love whatever else I would do. I think that's something about my character that I enjoy, is that no matter what I'm doing, I'm going to find fulfillment in it.
Yeah.
I think we all should, because we don't necessarily do anything. Things are just happening, and we can take part of it if we want to. And if we don't enjoy whatever we're taking part of, then it becomes miserable. Then it becomes a hell on earth. So whatever you're doing, do it with 100% fulfillment and enthusiasm.
Yeah, but you must have those days when you're going to training and you think, oh God, this again, kind of thing.
Not at all, not at all. Never that. I never dislike the actions that I have to take, even the actions that I dislike.
Yeah. And now, can we talk a bit about the mental side of the fight game? Like, how you prepare for this sort of stuff mentally? Because the physical aspect is one aspect of it, right? But the mental aspect is also equal, if not more, as far as I'm aware, that the mental side of it is also important.
Yes, I guess I used to perceive so, but when it comes to mentally preparing for a fight, it's the same way. I guess I don't mentally prepare for a fight. I guess there is no mental unpreparedness for me before or after a fight. I'm simply being. There is no time to get ready. This is an everyday thing for me. I wake up And it's not another day. Of course, more days are more excited than others, such as fights. But it's simply just I'm alive and I enjoy every second of it. And to mentally prepare myself for bouts and stuff like that, there is no, it's, I don't know. I couldn't tell you that I do anything different.
Okay, because for me, I've never been a fighter professionally, but I don't know like how you kind of get in the mindset of like, okay, today I'm going to get hit, you know? Today I'm going to get punched in the face. For me,
Well,
that's
I mean, every day I train, I'm getting punched in the face, so
yeah.
it doesn't make a difference to me.
Yeah.
Sometimes the training's harder than the fights.
Yeah.
So, but I never dreaded. I never deter myself from seizing the day, so to speak. Everybody, there's a and if whenever I guess I can say whenever I do feel down, or I do feel lethargic, and I do feel unmotivated to perform in the day, I just think about the life that I have, that I am breathing, that I'm able to feel pain, that I am alive. And it's more than what a lot of people could ask for.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that do not have the ability to think clearly. There's a lot of people that do not have the ability to think freely. There's a lot of people that do not have the ability to eat properly, walk properly, use their hands, use the tools that are given to them beautifully by life. So my life isn't that hard. It doesn't get that difficult. If I'm alive, an abled body, an abled mind, then I am already blessed. I've already achieved victory. I've already achieved what I needed to achieve. So anything beyond that is simply living.
That's so right, man. You're so spot on there. But I just wish that so many people out there had that kind of mental attitude because, you know, it's all about mindset, isn't it? To me, and it's all about the way we feel and perceive things are different, but we can train ourselves mentally to have a more positive outlook, regardless of our situation. Because my situation is completely different to your situation, for example, you know? But I still have my challenges, you have yours, you know? So all I'm trying to say is it's all about the way you perceive things and your outlook on life. And after hearing your interview with Ariel Helwani, that's what made me think, God, I've got to try and speak to this guy because I want his mental attitude to be shown to the world, you know? Because there's obviously loads of people like you. I'm not saying you're the only person that thinks like that, but I'm saying to get your perspective is valuable to people because, yes, you're a fighter, but that to me is only part of a person's life, you know?
Yeah, very small part of a person's life. What
Yeah.
we do is a very small part of our lives. It's how we be throughout life is what's more important. So it's not how we necessarily see things or how we speak to people, but it's how we're being and how free we are to ourselves. We usually cage ourselves within the mental confines of society that is built around us. The minute we're born, we're already told how to behave, what to believe in, what to do, what to eat. And we become completely trapped by social confines.
Yeah.
As you know, that I don't eat meat, I don't drink dairy, I don't eat any type of animal products. And a lot of people think that's weird, especially for a person of my profession. Well, how do you get your protein and all these other things? But it's relieving myself from a lot of the social constructs. If I am able to do this simply on fruits and vegetables, then who's to know what we're capable of with nothing? You truly find yourself, I feel, the minute, I would put it this way. Bruce Lee said it perfectly. When a sculptor is creating a masterpiece, he does not add on pieces of marble or clay. In fact, he chisels away all the imperfections until the masterpiece is shown. So the less you have, the more you gain. The less you have and you can see yourself with less, the more you can see yourself truly, because we are that nothing. We come from nothing, so we are that nothing. And to think that we are something that we give to ourselves or we made of ourselves is a complete fallacy of mine. We have to understand that we are that void, and only when we achieve that thought process of nothingness is only when we can achieve everything.
Yeah, I get you. And, you know, because in my situation, certain people think you're a wheelchair user, you're disabled, and they put you in a box, you know, and you can only achieve certain level of things, and that's it, you know. I find that even with fighters, be it the media and everybody puts fighters into a box, you know, and says, you're a fighter, you're a knucklehead, you're this, you're that, and we don't want to hear from you about anything else, or, you know, you're a black man, so you must know about BLM and all this kind of thing, and you need to be a spokesperson for the community and this, that, and the other. And that's pressure.
Yeah,
people.
It's funny how human beings, we tend to completely always classify and box things into their little categories, and yet we don't even really understand what the categories are. These are just words that we're just spewing out of our mouths and saying, this is what this is supposed to be, and this is what this is supposed to be. We'll claim some things are impossible or some things are unattainable by certain people, yet they're only the limitations that people put in their own minds. Just because you are limited in your ability does not mean that you have to limit everybody else in their ability. All because you perceive something to be impossible does not mean you should interrupt the person performing the impossible.
Why do you think that is, though?
Because we have such a lack of control over our lives in the world that categorizing and putting things in boxes gives us some type of sense of control. That I think I understand something because I'm able to box it and then categorize it. But you still do not understand it unless you break it open out of the box and really dig through and sit through all the little fine little segments of it. So we have to really just open our minds in that sense. I think a lot of people are just scared of seeing the truth. And the truth is, nothing truly matters. And I don't mean that it doesn't matter. I just mean things function without a purpose. It's purposelessness. Things arise mutually. You'll never find a field of flowers without bees. And you'll never find bees in a place with no flowers. And then the bee itself goes and gets honey, not for any reason. The bee doesn't say, I'm getting more honey than the next bee. It just gets bees honey because it's its duty to get honey. Same thing as electrons. Electrons buzz around atoms simply because it's their duty to buzz around atoms and keep everything stable. They don't say, well, I'm getting bored of this, I'm just going to quit. No, it's just the duty of it all. So when we find a purposelessness to do something, then that's when we find true purpose in life.
So do you think we as a human beings have a duty then, an inbuilt duty? Do you think that?
Of course, of course. It, nothing is a mistake. The fact that you are here and that you are alive, that means everything happened perfectly, and everything is continually to happen perfectly, and is without your interruption or your interjection. You did not come here out of your own free will. You were born here because of the decisions that were made by your parents. And then so on and so on and back and back and back and back. There is no purpose to you existing. The purpose you must find yourself and give it to yourself, and only then, and only when you do things purposelessly will you have a purpose. So I for sure, with human beings, we have to stop seeking the hero in us all. We think we're going to save the world by doing something different, that we're going to do the, I mean, look what happened with Catholicism. You know, Catholics went around the world enslaving, murdering people because they thought they were saving people. And that's because they wanted to build their own purpose for some reason.
It's weird. It's interesting how human beings justify certain things to themselves in order to make themselves feel bad.
But it's all fear. It's all fear. We're We're trying to stave off death as possible. We're trying to look for immortality, endless life. So when we do things that obviously put other people out of places because we're doing them out of fear, that's why gangs are made. You know, that's why people get together and jump people or shoot people, because it's always out of fear. And fear is a very fickle emotion.
Yeah.
You know, it's an emotion, it's an energy in motion. So when we do things out of fear, we tend to put other people off.
Yeah.
You know,
But
when we do
three.
things out of respect and love, we do not include anybody else. We simply don't care. We're just living, and therefore we don't step on anybody's toes.
But I tell you what's interesting. It's interesting to me is the pack mentality, and the group mentality. That's very interesting to me. There's a one-on-one conversation with someone, is always more fruitful to me than having a conversation with a group of people, you know, because with a group of people, you don't have a real conversation, I feel.
Of course not, because everybody's always trying to fit in. Everybody's trying to not be left alone, or they're afraid of being left alone with their own thoughts and being left alone to really discover their true selves. And they rather fit in than really take the journey inside of themselves, inside of their minds and their hearts. When you have a single person, yes, it is the most divine person. They will do good always. They will always think good thoughts. They will have high morality. But the minute you put them into a pact, they're going to agree with everybody else and say that's right because everybody else is doing it. But and they're afraid to stand alone. I like to was it, it's crazy to me. You know, it is quite insane that people would, you know, synergize with a group of people simply because they don't want to be left out.
Yeah, it happens in a magical way, though, in one respect, that you know it happens so instantaneously that it's seamless, you know, that kind of connection, the pack mentality just happens just like that, and it's mind blowing to observe, to take a step back and observe it. It's like, whoa, what the fuck just happened? Yeah.
And it's a trap, you know. We must always avoid such traps. We
Yeah.
should always, like, if we could, don't get me wrong, I believe together we can achieve more when we have a single mind,
Yeah.
correct, and a single heart.
Yeah.
But the problem is that we like to have a many mind and a many heart synergize in one direction. And there's a big difference between that. If we all had a single mind and we all had a single heart, as if we function as a group, but as individuals, we will always do the right thing. Because as an individual, you will always do the right thing. But when you function as a group and you have a many mind and a many heart, you're going to do what everybody else is doing, and it's never always the right thing.
Do you think, in some respect, human beings, we as human beings, are scared of the power that we've actually got? And we put these limitations on ourselves because we're actually scared of what we could achieve, but we just, like, we're almost in fear of the power that we actually have, and we don't want to accept the power that we actually have, if you get what I mean.
Of course, because with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't want to be responsible for their actions. They rather, that's why they like groups, you know, like that's why they like team sports. If my team loses, I can blame the rest of my team and I don't have to take responsibility.
Yeah.
You know, but if I have to take responsibility for my own actions, that is a scary thing. That's
Yeah.
a quite fearful thing to endeavor in. It's like, oh my goodness, you mean
Yeah.
I messed up and I have to take responsibility for that? No. I'd rather put blame on somebody else. It's
Yeah.
very fearful that we have to actually take responsibility for our own lives.
Yeah. But in your profession, in fighting, do you feel the opposite pressure if you think about it? Because behind you is a team of people, and yeah, you're the culmination of that work in a way. But do you feel, sometimes do you feel the pressure of upon you in terms of those other people, if you get what I mean?
No, when it comes down to it, we always have a choice to make. So if I'm with the wrong team and if I'm with the wrong people around me, I have every responsibility within myself to excavate myself from that situation and truly find a better place for myself. So we always have that choice to stick around a place that's not good for you and the team that's not working for you. It still falls on you because you've made that decision.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. Can see that. And I wanted to talk to you about mindfulness and stuff like that. Do you believe in mindfulness? Do you
I would have to understand what that word means a little bit better when we talk
But,
about mindfulness. The same way
like,
when people talk about consciousness, oh, I'm conscious, or I'm mindful, or I am aware, consciously aware. I really don't understand that statement because are we ever really mindful, consciously aware, or thoughtful at all? We're simply going through.
what I mean is that living, like, when people say about mindfulness, living in the absolute moment,
Well, I would call that, I wouldn't call that mindfulness. I would call that present. You know, you're awake, you're in the moment, yes, and you're present. And when you are in the moment, you it's impossible to be thinking about the future and or the past. Because there is no future or the past when you're in the moment. Every moment that has ever happened or that ever will happen is happening right now. And to be mindful would have to encompass thinking outside of the moment.
But it's really hard to not, even when you're thinking about having a conversation now, you're thinking about what's good before, what your experience could be, 5 seconds down the line, So it's really hard to live within that second is what I'm saying to you.
We can perceive it that way, but I don't necessarily think about what I'm going to say. We definitely live in a, you should be living in a very reactive state. I mean, we're just always reacting to stimuli that is constantly coming to us. But if we're constant, if we are not, if we're thinking about what we're going to say or what we're going to do 5 seconds from now, we're not living in the moment. We're not thinking about what is actually being said to us. We're not absorbing it completely. We're just waiting for our turn to speak.
Fair dues, but we all want to be heard, I suppose, and even though most of the time I don't know what I'm saying, but as human beings, we have this urge to, well, I have this urge to be heard and to learn, and through conversation is what I always say, through conversation is what my biggest school,
Yes, and of course, we all have the desire to be heard, but if you want to be heard, it's quite simple as this. If you don't speak and you just think your thoughts, can't you not hear them without ears inside of your head? Then you are being heard. You are being heard by someone, by something beyond yourself. So when you truly understand and are comfortable with being with yourself, you are never not heard. Your thoughts are always reverberating from within the confines of your skull, and you can hear yourself without even speaking, without ears even. So we are always heard. We just do not acknowledge ourselves clearly enough to actually hear ourselves. This is why a
something.
lot of wise people talk to themselves. There is no better converser than yourself because he is unbiased. He will not check your knowledge. He won't ostracize you for anything you said. It is the true self. And so we must talk to ourselves to really find moral deepening.
Do you do that a lot then?
Oh, of course. I am one of my best friends, I would say.
Would you say you do meditation?
Yes, definitely. I do meditation a lot. Anything can be meditation. I'm constantly meditating. Life becomes a meditation for me. I'm always thinking doesn't mean I'm attached to the thoughts that I'm always thinking, but the fact that I'm able to bounce off ideas with myself, I'm able to calculate the best moral behavior or moral judgment during every single interaction with myself or with others. So life should be a meditation. Even when you're sweeping, when you're washing dishes, you should always be meditating on something. And meditating doesn't mean to quiet the mind. It simply means to concentrate and focus on one thing and make it more clear, to augment it into something that shines back to you.
Yeah, because I've tried like to actually sit down and like do classical meditation, but I find it hard to switch the brain off, you know?
Well, that's the thing. We never switch the brain off. The brain is constantly making calculations.
Yeah.
The fact that we are trying to control the mind and quiet it down, we have already lost the purpose of meditation. Meditation is not to quiet the mind. It's to detach yourself from the thoughts that pass through the mind. I would say this as an example. It's like sitting on the side of a road and watching cars go by.
Okay.
If you try to stop every single car that goes by, it's nearly impossible because another car is going to zoom by. You're going to run after this car. You're going to run after this car. That's not meditation. Meditation is to simply sit by the road and see the cars go by and be like, oh, that was a nice car. Oh, that was a nice car. Oh, look, that's a nice car. But don't be attached to the cars passing by the road, because it is an impossibility to try and stop something that is not you, which is the mind, from doing what the mind does, which is calculating and thinking and constantly breaking things down into their original origins or expanding them into something more greatly. We just simply have to sit and watch them pass by, watch the wheels go round. And only when we do have that detachment, we are truly meditating now. And then we can focus on a thought if we wish to, but it's not necessary.
Yeah. It basically means not having judgment and letting things just wash over you, kind of thing.
Yes, yes. Of course, we live in a physical body. So, like, if someone's trying to disturb your physical peace, you know, it's like how children act. You know, the minute when they're being attacked or when they're in danger, the child does whatever it needs to do to defend itself. But the minute it finds itself back at peace, it goes right back to playing. It doesn't dwell on the past. It doesn't think, oh, man, you done me wrong and this and this and this happened. No, it's like, okay, the problem is out of the way. Now I get to go back to playing. This is our souls. This is our true self. We should be able to defend ourselves verbally, physically, mentally. But the minute that problem escapes our line of sight, we should go back to playing, because this is the purpose of life, or purposeless of life. We're here to enjoy ourselves and to experience, whether the experience is negative or positive, however we may perceive it, but it is an experience all the same.
Yeah.
And if we start to dwell on things that happen to us or worry about things that has yet to happen, then we stop experiencing the moment in life itself.
Yeah. But all these things are kind of easy to say, but hard to put into practice, I find, you know?
Yes, there. I guess it is very difficult, you know, because we do have attachments like family and friends, and we think that we have responsibility towards other people's lives. But when we start to see ourselves in other people, even the evil people, that these are aspects of myself, which I do not wish to face. And when we begin to face them, then we can really put these things into practice. For instance, when I have enemies or people come and attack me, I understand that these are aspects of myself that I need to fight with.
Yeah.
I'm not scared to fight. And since I'm not scared to fight, I do not dwell in thought with the negativity. I simply handle it physically when I need to. Even if I don't like parts of myself, but I will fight with them. That's why in yoga, the warriors should never turn down a challenge.
Why is that?
Because if we do not fight with ourselves, we do not clarify ourselves. It is one of the most carnalistic and most ancient ways of communication with another, which is usually why you see when people fight with each other, even if they hate each other, at the end of the fight, they understand each other and respect each other, and love is shown.
Yeah. But even in fight, you have different weight classes, right? And you can't fight like easily like a heavyweight guy, because that would be unfair, right? So you can't challenge yourself to that degree. You get what I mean?
I don't believe so. I don't believe that it's unfair, and fighting doesn't necessarily mean winning or losing. You know, when we fight with other people, we're just simply trying to understand ourselves.
Yeah.
So it's not about achieving a goal when we're fighting. It's simply conversing in a physical way. Before there were words, there were actions.
Yeah.
So this is a conversation, the way that I look at it. And the weight class doesn't matter to me. Smaller people have advantages that bigger people don't have.
Yeah.
So we have to understand that. And not only that, it's a fight. That's all we're doing. It has nothing to do with winning or losing. We have to just simply do it. And then if we do it, if we step into the arena and we put ourselves on the line, we have already won, because there are a lot of people that even will refuse to look at themselves in the darkest hour. And
Yeah.
if we don't look at ourselves in the darkest hour, we'll never truly know ourselves. Therefore, we're constantly feeling ourselves with the herd and constantly trying to be right all the time. It's my right to be wrong.
Yeah. So, talking about darkest hour, what would you say has been your darkest hour in your life? Would you share anything about that?
I guess my darkest hour would be in my life would be it's hard to say. I feel every day I'm in the most beautiful moment of my life and the darkest hour of my life. It's almost an insanity. With everyone that I meet, you know, there's always going to be the darker side and the lighter side of decision making or thought process that I can have. I believe we all have that. I mean, it's kind of like, in a weird way, like when you see a very cute puppy, right? You have the notion, oh, I want to pet the puppy, but you also have the notion to squeeze the life out of it at the same time. And only when we have that comfortability with that thought process of that yin and yang, of that dark and light, can we see the whole of ourselves. The fact that we can appreciate our violence and our capacity for violence is only when we can choose peace.
What about your relationship to violence? What do you say you have a what how would you describe your relationship to violence?
I have a good relationship with violence. I believe it's necessary. I believe that we all should be capable of being violent to a certain extent, or being dangerous to a certain extent, because it's only violent people or people capable of extreme violence that can choose peace. Anybody that is not capable of that is peaceful by default, and that simply means harmless. And if you're harmless, you are subjugated to anybody else that can do harm to you, whether it be verbally or physically. So we should all be competent and dangerous with our tongue or with our hands.
Because do you mean that you're armed enough to defend yourself, whether it be verbally or physically? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, we should be always able to be ready and completely ready and enjoying the confrontation that we get into. Only then can we choose the peace.
Yeah. And do you ever not like confrontation? Because I sometimes don't like confrontation because it scares me. So do you ever feel that?
That and this goes back to a, I guess, a into a deeper insight that, of course, it is scary to be. To get into confrontations. But fear is simply an emotion that my body is feeling, is not what my true self experiences.
Yeah.
So although that there's fear there, is how should I put it? Although I am scared of confrontation, I'm not deterred from it.
Yeah.
I'm not disgusted from it. So I will still endeavor into that confrontation, because I understand that it is a way of understanding myself a lot better.
Yeah. Cause just to talk about myself a bit, whenever I'm feeling anxious or confrontation coming, I feel my heart beating faster. You know, I feel my skin getting warmer. You know, that's when I know I'm not okay with this. You know, I'm
But
not
it's not that you're
comfortable
not
with
okay
it.
with this. It's simply just an excitement of energy.
Yeah.
It's not that you're not okay with it. You are okay with it. And if you endeavor into it, you'll find that you are more okay with it. And when you get through it, you find that you're better for it. You're like, oh, thank God I did that. And thank God that it was exciting and it was very frustrating sometimes, and it was very elevating in emotion, but I got through it and I'm better for it at the end of the day. It's a kind of like, when the father throws the son into the pool to learn how to swim. Sure, it's scary, but now you know how to swim. Hopefully, hopefully.
You did just get the
But
fuck
it is scary, and confrontations are always something that we try to avoid. But if we constantly try to live a comfortable life, we live a very small life.
there. So do you try and make yourself uncomfortable on a daily basis then?
I don't try to make myself uncomfortable on a daily basis, but I do not shy away from uncomfortable feelings. So throughout the day, I don't know what to expect and I don't know what the day brings me. And if it's pain and if it's uncomfort, I just embrace it the same as if it was love and if it was caring. I embrace it the same because it's an experience of life. And the only way that I can experience uncomfortableness or pain or discomfort or love and joy is only if I was alive. And if I did not experience any of these things and I didn't have the opportunity, then I might as well be dead. And I would rather be alive. So bring on the pain and bring on the discomfort, just as you bring on the joy and bring on the love. Because if I didn't have any of these things, it means I am not breathing. It means I am not thinking and my heart is not beating. So as long as I can feel these things, whether they be negative or positive, I am glad to be alive to experience them.
I understand that, but it's just making me think then when you say that, it's like in your line of work, you must get a lot of adulation and people think you're the best thing since sliced bread, and the other part of people probably thinking you're like dog shit or something like that. You're really boring. You're not a good fighter or this, that, the other. So all I'm trying to say is you must get that whole pendulum of good to bad, to love to hate. How do you deal with all of those varying levels of emotions and reactions towards you, if that makes any sense at all?
No, it makes a complete sense, and I deal with that a lot, of course. And the best way that I deal with it is looking into myself. So I have to be honest with myself. People do that to me quite often, but I also have these thoughts about people, And the fact that I also have these thoughts about people, I understand why they have these thoughts about people. The reason why I would have any of these type of thoughts about people, if I ever do, and whenever I did, it was because there was parts of my life that I saw in them that I was unsatisfied with. So when understanding that, I know that when people hate on me or dislike the way that I do things and whatnot, it's because there's something in their lives that they are unsatisfied with. And it's usually the case is that they are too afraid to take that risk to discover themselves. They are afraid to look in the mirror. And when they see me, they see a man that is not afraid to look in the mirror, and they hate the fact that they couldn't do it themselves. So they want to try and ostracize me for doing it and try to make me feel small because it's the way that they're feeling. So it's simply a reflection. Now, there's ways of doing that, of dealing with that. You can just say, oh, fuck off. I don't care about anything what you're saying. But if they try to physically stop me from what I'm doing, then we can just go fisticuffs and say, okay, goodbye. I can deal with you this way as well. But this is why I love being competent and being physically competent or mentally competent, because I can do away with such spells with words or with my fists. So I am unafraid, or I am undeterred from negativity coming my direction, because I have made myself well equipped to deal with such confrontation.
I probably know the answer to this question, but I'll ask it anyway. From what you're saying, the question that came to my mind was, which would you say you're more confident in, the strength of the mind or your body?
I feel that they both go hand in hand.
Yeah, I thought you would say that, but I thought I'd ask you anyway.
I feel the more confident a person is mentally, the more capable that they are physically as well, or the more capable they're allowing their physicality to be. Doesn't mean that just because you're confident in mind, you're going to be strong. No, but the smarter person knows how to work out better, knows how to train themselves better, and knows the reality of what they should be doing better. And the person that is competent in body knows how to train their mind better and knows exactly what they need to do to become smarter or become more confident mentally as well. So it can go hand in hand. It's not that they always do, but we have the ability to make it so.
And the other part of that question was like, how do you deal with people blowing smoke up your ass, right? How do you deal with people going, oh, you're great, you're this, that, you're that, and how do you stay level-headed? Well, whatever's level-headed to you, how do you stay grounded? Is my question really?
Well, it's the same thing. Like, how would you say the same thing that I was saying about negativity? You don't shy away from it. Embrace it all. All the gifts that you get, still embrace them. Take them into you. If someone compliments me, I take it with complete confidence and I take it with complete joy. Do I attach myself to it? No, the same way I do not attach myself to the negativity as well. I simply deal with it respectfully as I can, the same way I deal with the other side. If I do not take compliments from a person gracefully, the person might feel bad about me not taking their compliment, right? Like when someone tries to do something good for you, and if you don't accept it, it makes the other person feel bad. So you just must accept the negativity and the positivity completely, and at the same time, not be attached to the fruits of thy labor.
But you're kind of doing it on their behalf, aren't you? Really,
In a sense, but if you do something on somebody else's behalf, you are doing it on your own behalf as well. There is no separation. That's the beauty of it. You know, if I am teaching somebody a lesson, I am also teaching myself a lesson. And if I am receiving a lesson, I am completely receiving a lesson because I know that they receive a lesson at the same time as well. I guess in an aspect like steel sharpens steel, you know, so we must always be there to help everybody along the path, whether it means destroying them or building them up.
Do you take joy and pleasure in teaching other people?
Oh yes, especially children. I love teaching children martial arts or philosophies about things. I feel that they have the most unbiased mind. You know, when you come into the world brand new, you're ready to absorb and deal with anything that's confronting you. Only when we grow up do we deter ourselves from hardships. You never seen a person work harder than a child. You know, they don't have the capacity to say, "Oh, I don't want to do this anymore." They just understand that it's happening and they must go through it.
So, as a child, how long did it take you to have this kind of mindset and to kind of go along this path that you're on?
I honestly feel as a child, I've always had a similar mindset, whether or not I could put it into words exactly when I was younger, but I felt that I was always on the same road or path on that journey. Of course, there were mishaps and hiccups throughout the road and everything, but I don't think mentally I've changed so much so. I just simply discovered more of myself. I allowed myself to be myself. I never fit in with the crowd when I was in school or as a child. So nothing really changed, really. I just always felt that this was my personal journey, my personal quest to take on to myself. And whether as hard and joyful it might have been, I continue walking down that path. There's a beauty in crying. There's a beauty in going through pain, just as there's a beauty in laughing and going through love. And we have to embrace it all so we can get the complete picture.
And I was just wondering that then because you were saying you never really fit in as a child and so I was wondering whether it was that that made you spend the time with yourself and with your own thoughts and Do you think that had a big impact or not?
Oh, certainly, certainly so. I was the middle child, so as the saying goes, you worry least about the wheel that doesn't squeak at all. So I was left to the confines of my own mind to raise myself most of the time. I was kind of looked over a lot in my childhood because I was the middle child. I didn't have the responsibility and adoration that my older brother had, and I didn't have the baby or coddling or love that my younger sister had. I was kind of in the middle and left to my own thoughts. So I think that was a blessing in disguise. I was able to really look at the world through my own eyes and not look at it through the eyes of society of what they tried to build for me.
And other people's expectations, and
Exactly.
you kind of go under the radar, if you will.
Yes.
And I just wanted to ask you about, in the Ariel Helwani conversation, you said you had a thought of the older version of yourself, and you kind of saw an older version of yourself far into the future. Could you, I don't know if you remember that, but could you elaborate on that at all?
Yes, so like I said earlier, everything that is happening, everything that will ever happen or has happened is happening right now. So when you truly exist in the moment, you can truly see yourself in every spatial time frame. So when I saw myself in the future, is like I live every day almost having deja vu. I can see myself becoming before I'm coming to that point. And I saw myself coming to this point already. I saw myself coming to this point fighting in the UFC. And it's like waking up from a dream every day and realizing that that dream wasn't a dream at all. It was simply a reality that has not been achieved at the moment, at the moment. And it's a beautiful thing. And I think we all have that capability. And it's a wonderful thing to see. We are always there. The future self is always there. The past self is always there. And when we combine these things together and bring them here into the middle, is when we truly see ourselves. Every movement that we will ever make and every thought that we will ever have and ever had and ever made is existing here at the moment, which is why you are here at the moment.
Well, it's really kind of difficult, that though, isn't it? I was just thinking about deja vu. Whenever you have deja vu, it's kind of a weird feeling. It's not a pleasure. It's kind of not, for me at least, it's not always a pleasurable feeling, the deja vu feeling. It's like, I've had this feeling before. Or have I? Kind of thing. It's like, it's
Well, that's
kind
the thing.
of
We just have to embrace it. We just have to embrace it. Even if you're like, oh my God, I've been here before, instead of saying, is this real or not? Just say that this is happening. This is happening. I am walking through the tunnel of time or space, whatever you want to call it, and I am here now. It's going to happen no matter what. And if we see it before it happens, take it as a gift, you know, take it as a gift.
I don't know about you, but sometimes when I have deja vu, I'm like, fucking hell, am I losing my mind? Is it finally fucking happening?
Well, have you ever had your mind in the first place? Can we say, have we ever really been sane?
Yeah, but
We've
that's
never been sane. We've never had our mind in the first place. The mind is not ours. The fact that we cannot stop our thoughts tells you that your mind is not your own.
But that in itself is a terrifying. I don't know why, but it feels like a terrifying thought.
Well, and I'm pretty sure that seeing a big wave to a surfer is a terrifying thought, but you got to ride it anyway, right? That's where you're going to have fun when you ride the tip of the wave. You know, we can't control the wave, we can't control the ocean. All we can do is ride on it for a while. That's all we can do. And we just got to embrace the wave coming. And if we have that wave of emotion or that thought process of our future selves or our past selves, ride the wave. That's all that ever matters, you know. If we try to swim against it, we break. We got a ride going with it. And then when we go down, we think, oh, that's the end of it. But sooner or later, another wave comes along.
You're right, but it's to actually do it, it's kind of even to think about it, it's
But
terrifying,
that's
huh?
but that's the trick. Don't do it. Let it happen.
Okay, yeah.
Let it happen. Just go with it. You know, this we are the only creatures on this earth that does not go with nature. We try to go against it. We try to tame it. We try to control it. Every other creature, they don't have anxiety. You know, they don't have mental issues. They simply go with nature and they're completely happy. They go along with life doing what they have to do. Only we interrupt ourselves. Only human beings stop ourselves from actually being human beings because we think that we have some type of responsibility or control over everything. And we don't. We don't. This world will continue to exist once we're gone. It won't stop moving. The same way the ocean won't stop making waves. So we just must embrace and enjoy the waves and look how beautiful it really is. Only when we ride on the top of the waves, we'll stop from drowning ourselves. We can actually breathe the air in the sky and see the beauty of the sun. But if we're constantly trying to swim against the waves, we'll find ourselves underwater in no time.
We will, yeah. And do you like swimming?
Love swimming.
Because I hate it. That's why I'm asking you.
I used to hate it. I used to hate it. When I was learning to swim, I almost drowned three times.
Really? Because
Yeah.
having cerebral palsy as I do, I was always told that's the best thing for you because it exercises all your muscles, right? And but as a child, I always hated it. And I think the fact that more and more people said to me it was really good for you made me kind of hate it even more, kind of thing. So when you talk about the way down, I was just there thinking about my own swimming experience and thinking, fuck you, you said about weights, and I couldn't even do the fucking swimming pool.
Well, that's why it's easier to float than it is to swim.
Yeah.
So that's why we must relax and let it happen, you know. The best surfer rides the wave, it rides with it. It doesn't ride against it.
Have you been surfing then?
I would love to start surfing, actually. It's one thing that I've always wanted to do.
Are you not allowed to do it?
No, I am. I am. I just haven't found the time and the
Okay.
place to do it. I live in Florida at the moment and we don't have such big waves to really surf.
Okay.
I've done skimboarding, but I would like to go out to an ocean with bigger waves so I can actually try surfing.
It must be a certain type of skill to be able to do that, right?
Yeah, and the
Surfing.
skill that I would have to associate with what everybody tells me is the skill of letting go.
We keep coming back to
it's the thing that we're trying to achieve in life.
that.
The minute that we're born, we have to try and learn how to let go because all we're ever trying to do in life is hold on to life. But it's gonna leave you no matter what. No one is getting out of life alive. You're gonna have to die anyway, so don't take it so seriously.
Fair enough. Is there anything you'd like to ask me? You don't have
well,
to, but I'm
you
just.
mentioned that you had cerebral palsy, so I'm also I'm very curious on how life with that is like.
Life with this is like, I don't want any violence playing or anything like that. But it's tricky, you know? But it's made tricky by society rather than the condition itself, you know?
I like that. I like
It's
how you said
made
that.
tricky because you can't get into buildings, and it's made tricky because of other people's attitudes, because they put you in a box. I mean, you're in a fucking chair anyway, so and they try and put you even into a smaller box. So it's like, what the fuck are you doing to me, man? I'm already in this box, and you're trying to further constrict me even further. And that doesn't seem very fair to me. Very fair to me. And the thing
So I guess you could
that
say,
annoys me the most. Sorry, go on.
I guess you can say having cerebral palsy is like being a black man in America.
Or even worse, in fact.
No, I would say so. I would say so. Because society is a very weird thing. You know, we tend to limit people or further limit people that are already limited. And
I know it's not about me, but I just wanted to share this other thing with you as well. The thing that really annoys me about it is, because I'm quite talkative and I like having a laugh and just chilling and enjoying myself. Because I make an impression on people don't forget me. And that in a way sometimes really annoys the fuck out of me. Because I go to the shop and I have an interaction with a person and that person will remember me like two, 3 weeks later and pretend that they're my best friend. I'm like, I had a very, very small interaction with you and you're remembering me like I'm your long lost brother.
Yeah. And there's a quote from a song that I love, I enjoy. It's from Leonard Cohen. And he says, "Here's to the few who forgive what you do, but here's to the fewer who don't even care." We have to embrace the people that don't care, you know, because it's they don't interject themselves in your life in such a way where they limit your ability to function the way you want to function. So and not only that, then they begin to treat you as if you're not normal, as if you're not a person, that you're simply a commodity to make them feel more holy about themselves.
And the other thing I find, and this is why I was asking you some of the questions that I was asking you, I was like, simultaneously, people think you're a genius, and simultaneously, people think, well, why can't my disabled friend or my disabled brother or disabled sister do the spectacular thing that this other exceptional disabled person can do? It's like, why isn't my disabled person a superhero? Why is he so unique and the other person isn't? And that's something that really frustrates me. That I can't just be allowed to be normal. You either have to be exceptional or you have to be really, really shit. And you can't be in the middle. I just want to be in the middle,
Well, I totally understand that, because it's the human conundrum of categorizing things. You know, we have to say things are black and white, but there's a big, large gray area in between, and we never really explore that. You know, there's morality to every action. And it's like, that's why I don't like law a lot. You know, law separates things into black and white. It's not like what you're doing is important, it's how you're doing it.
To me, I watch the UFC and stuff like that, but to me, you are just another person, you do that job, but I don't think, it's cool to talk to you and everything, but I don't put you on a pedestal, if you get what I mean, or something like that. Because I like to treat people as individuals, regardless of what they do. Because that's how I want to be treated myself. And I don't want to be thought of as exceptional or really shit, either
Yeah,
way.
you don't want to be categorized.
No, because I'm naturally categorized anyway. I'm fucking brown and I'm in a chair,
Yeah.
How much more categorizing do you want to do? So yeah, before we end recording, is there anything you'd like to say?
I believe we had a wonderful conversation. Yeah.
I'm glad you say that because I heard one of your other interviews and you were like going, I don't like my attention goes very quickly. And I was like, shit, if I say to him, but we talk for an hour, he might think this guy might be a complete dick and I have to speak to him for an hour. It's like, I'm glad you enjoyed it anyway. Anyway, I'd just like to say thank you for doing this before we end the recording. Thank you again for doing it and talking to little old me, you know.
Oh, thank you for having me on. It was a pleasurable experience.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.